Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, April 17th. My name is Magnus Tevel. I'm your host for today, and we're glad you're here with us this morning listening to our program. We're going to start off in a couple moments with our regular Monday segment, What's Up in Burnaby. We're going to tell you about some of the big stories happening in Burnaby this week. After that, we have an interview with Alanise Obabaswam, who has a new exhibition opening at the Vancouver Art Gallery. It actually opened last week, and our reporter Vivian went down to interview her, and I had the privilege of attending the opening just over a week ago, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. For the last part of the program, we are going to be looking at rewiring the brain with Annie Hopper. It's a fascinating subject, neuroplasticity, and how it can be harnessed to help heal brain injuries and allow people to recover after all manner of stuff. It's a really fascinating subject. So that's coming up in the second half of the program. Plus, we'll have some music and Bird Note and some other stuff that we like to bring you every week. All right, let's get going with the show. All right, let's talk about what's up in Burnaby. With me today is Srishti Gangdev, reporter with the Burnaby Beacon. Welcome to the program again this week.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So we have a few stories to talk about this week. A Burnaby firefighter and former NHL player who passed away last Monday is being remembered. Tell me about this.
Yeah, just a really, you know, sad story. Ray Sawada, who was a former NHL player with the Dallas Stars for a couple of seasons, retired from hockey and became a Burnaby firefighter in 2017. So was with the department for 6 years. And he just very, very young, passed away at the age of 38 from what seems to have been a heart attack wow. while playing the game he loved, recreational hockey. So there's just been kind of this outpouring of public grief and support for his family. And it's just really, you know, you see the kind of impact that someone has on people's lives when things like this happen.
Interesting. Was he active in the community beyond being a firefighter?
Yeah, he was a well-known face in the recreational hockey right. community, I would say. He played with a couple of different teams, ice hockey out in Richmond, around the Lower Mainland, things like that. And yeah, it's just people have described him as a bright light, someone who just really loved the game of hockey. He leaves behind a wife and two young kids. Like I say, he was only 38, so his kids are quite young as well. Yep. And yeah, it's just really, really sad to hear.
Yeah, it's a really sad story, especially when it's, you know, sudden and at that age.
Exactly.
You know, leaves so much behind and unfinished.
Exactly. Yeah. And there has been a GoFundMe set up to support his family. Of course, his wife will, you know, need time to process this and recover. And the GoFundMe has raised quite an amazing amount already. I think it was at $300,000 last wow. time I checked. Yep. But it is still active. If anyone wants to help out the family as they kind of get through this really tough time. And we've got a link to that in our story on the situation.
Yeah, that really speaks to his impact in the community.
Exactly. Yeah. And it seems like the Burnaby Firefighters Department is going to be his badge number was number 490. So they are going to be remembering that number and commemorating that number in perpetuity, they said.
Well, sad story. Another big story coming up. Recently, we talked about the new federal ridings proposed for Burnaby, and those stirred up some controversy at the time mm-hmm. and are being looked at again. This week, new provincial ridings are being announced for Burnaby based on the 2021 census. What's new and changed with the new boundaries?
Yeah, so kind of the same thing we had talked about last time with the federal boundaries, except that, you know, luckily we're not going to be shoved into other cities, which seemed a bit weird to me at least. But, you know, the population, as we know, is growing pretty swiftly, and that necessitates more boundaries and more ridings being put up to make sure that, you know, the portions of Burnaby with more people have as much representation and things like that. So it looks like they're going to be adding another riding to Burnaby. At the moment, we've got four.
That's quite significant.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly the number of people that, you know, triggers that need for a new boundary, but it does speak to, you know, how quickly the city is growing. And it looks like they're going to be, as we know, Metrotown and Edmonds are, you know, the quickest growing parts of the city at this point. So it does seem like the additional boundaries are going to be put up in the south side of the city to reflect that.
So I've had a quick look at the map, and I was looking at each one individually, which made it a little hard to put it all together like a puzzle. Mm-hmm. But it seemed to me that these boundaries were, for the most part, pretty self-contained within Burnaby, so that there really are Burnaby ridings and not sort of shared with other municipalities.
Yeah, and now we are going to actually see that we're kind of not amalgamating, of course, but New Westminster will also be part of one of these boundaries. Yeah, so there is a bit of inter-municipality mingling, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they have to, you know, bring a certain amount of population into each riding throughout the province. And there are some other rules regarding rural areas, which we won't get into, mm-hmm. but I mean, it's never going to be really easy or possible to really keep things too self-contained. I mean, there are always going to be a bit of spilling, but
definitely,
you know, with those federal ridings, people were really quite upset that it's, you know, because there was a lot of that going on, I think the reaction was, it felt like it was diluting the voice of Burnaby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And here it seems, well, Burnaby's getting one more riding. So if anything, you know, Burnaby's getting a stronger voice.
Yeah. And, you know, I would maybe I'll ask our sister publication, New West Anchor, about how the folks in New West feel about this. But yeah, it definitely doesn't feel like what the heck is going on, like right. Who is actually my MP or anything like that. And, you know, we did get an email asking why they're even doing this and like how much money is it costing the taxpayer and things like that. So, you know, we should address that this is something that happens every 10 years. Mm-hmm. The federal and the provincial electoral boundaries commission are mandated to look at these things every 10 years to, you know, make any changes that need to be changed to reflect, you know, changes in population and things like that.
Yeah. And it is an independent commission that looks at this new population data and decides on decides on creating these new boundaries to make it as fair as possible. I think it's, you know, people may hear a lot of stories from down in the United States where they have a very different sort of way. Most states anyway have a very different way of creating their electoral boundaries, mm-hmm. which give parties a lot of chance to manipulate that process. And that's not right. The case here.
Yeah, there's hopefully no gerrymandering going on here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would be tough to tell if there was, since Burnaby historically votes in one particular way. I don't think I remember the last time we had a liberal MLA at all.
Right.
So it would be tough to tell if there was gerrymandering right. happening in Burnaby, I guess. But yeah, it is a very different process than we see in the United States.
All right. Well, I guess Burnabyites can be happy for their extra representation.
Yep.
Burnaby is also, the city of Burnaby is planning to improve washroom facilities in city parks, particularly the availability of them. What's the plan here and what is the need?
Yeah, you know, I think this speaks to accessibility. I did, you know, a couple of years ago when I was with Global News, I did a story about washroom facilities in downtown Vancouver.
Yep.
And it's really tough for especially homeless folks who mm-hmm. they can't go home and use the bathroom. They have to use public bathrooms, and there's a huge lack of public bathrooms. And currently in Burnaby, only about half of our parks have actual washroom facilities. So they're looking at adding washroom facilities, improving the ones that are already there. You know, some of the ones that are there are just like porta potties, things like that. So they're looking at, you know, adding permanent facilities and self-cleaning facilities to as many of these parks as they can.
So we're talking about both creating more facilities to improve the availability and also improving the ones that exist then, sounds like.
Yeah, the report to council says that, you know, a lot of the major parks in the city do have washrooms. So we're talking like Central Park, Burnaby Mountain Park, things like that. But most of the, you know, we have a lot of little neighborhood parks. I feel like every couple of blocks, there's a beautiful little park set up there.
Yeah.
But most of those do not have any washroom facility whatsoever. So we're looking at the possibility of how can we add facilities there?
And that can be so important. I mean, I can think of many times when I've been very thankful for, you know, when you're out in parks and stuff for a, for a nearby washroom to use. And as a parent, when my children were small, holy moly, that's important. Because, you know, I mean, it's one thing when, you know, you can send your boy off behind a tree, but not so easy if you have a young daughter. And really, children shouldn't be put through that anyway. And it's unlike the rest of us. You know, a 5-minute walk to home.
It's tough for kids, for sure. Yeah. And I think washrooms are really a human right. So it's something that all cities should be looking at doing.
You know, and you mentioned the situation in downtown Vancouver. And, you know, you can see, well, on the sidewalks when you're walking around sometimes, the evidence that there are not enough toilets and how really important it is.
Yeah. And, you know, people occasionally try and cast this as a fault of the people who live there. But, you know, if you're a homeless person living in downtown Vancouver, you need to go just like the rest of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an indictment of this is of the system that we put in place, not of those people needing to go to the bathroom.
And while, you know, it's, you know, lots of private businesses and stuff, you know, it's not really their responsibility to provide that. And of course, most things like restaurants, which do have toilets, you know, it's not really compatible with their business to have just people walking in from the street to use their toilets, which really only leaves places like malls and other sort of public gathering places, which do have those facilities, but that's still really few and far between.
Exactly. Especially in Vancouver, there are not a lot of malls in Vancouver.
No.
Except for Pacific Center, there's really nothing downtown at all. And I guess the situation in Burnaby is different because we do actually have major public malls in... Is there a mall anywhere in Edmonds? I don't think so. All the other three town centers do have really accessible public spaces like that.
And of course, you know, particularly we're talking about parks here. And if you or your child need to go, you need to go. And you know, we want to draw people to parks and have them go there and feel comfortable and have a good time and you know, family events and people doing barbecues and, you know, all those things. And these facilities are needed to help support that kind of activity in the park, which is exactly what parks are for. So this is great to hear that this is happening.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, those are our stories for this week. Thank you so much for joining me this week, Srishti.
Thank you for having me.
One quick question. You guys are doing your readers poll. How's that going? Have you got to results yet or is it still open?
Yeah, we know who the winners are, but I can't tell you yet.
All right.
So we're just tallying up the results and we'll have some stuff to present shortly. I think in the next week or so, we'll be starting to release the winners. So we'll have lots to talk about next week on that.
That's great. Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
All right. How do people find out more about your stories?
Yeah, just head to burnabybeacon.com. We send out a newsletter every morning with information on events, restaurants, politics, news, kind of everything that you need to know every day.
Excellent. Thanks for joining me this week. We'll be back next week with another edition of What's Up in Burnaby. Srishti Gangdev, reporter with the Burnaby Beacon. Thank you for being here.
All right. We'll talk soon.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
And we will be back next week with another edition of What's Up in Burnaby. For now, though, let's take a look at the Vancouver and area weather for the coming week. Looks like an interesting week. We have a few days of rain to get through first, through Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then on Thursday, things are going to shift to a few days of mix of sun and cloud with occasional rain. Tomorrow, though, there's a chance of thundershowers, so look out for that. That's always a little bit of fun. But overall, a fairly normal spring week. Highs up to 10 today, and tomorrow lows down to 4 overnight. Things get a little warmer later in the week with highs up to 12, and warming up towards the weekend for highs of 15 or 16 degrees, although it's still a mix of sort of sun and cloud, and probably good weather for going for a hike as long as you dress properly. Anyway, that's our weather for this week. Up next, we have an interview done by our reporter, Vivian. At the Vancouver Art Gallery, they have a new exhibition just opened a week ago. It's called The Children Have to Hear Another Story. Alanis Obomsawim, and Alanis is Abenaki filmmaker and activist who started making films in the 1960s, very early, and she's motivated. Her initial motivation for starting this work was simply that the stories she heard about Indigenous people through the media and through education and other stories, other places that were not the ones the children needed to hear. They were not the stories of the Indigenous people themselves, but you know, the mainstream culture, the mainstream media sort of reinterpretation of that, of those stories and of that representation, which often wasn't very flattering or appropriate for children to grow up with. So she became very interested in finding a way to tell those stories. One of the ways was making films, and she became connected with the Canada's National Film Board, who helped produce films she created. But she was also very interested in creating educational materials and curriculum materials for schools, and particularly for schools teaching Indigenous children. And the exhibition down at the Vancouver Art Gallery tells that story and shows a lot of those films and materials, and it's a really fascinating story. I was able to attend the opening on April 6th, the sort of pre-night opening, and that was great. And Vivian was down again to the art gallery to meet with Alanis for an interview last week, and this is that story. The exhibition itself runs until August 7th. This summer, so you have a lot of time for it. And here's Vivian's interview.
My name is Alanis Obomsawim. I am a Wambanaki woman, which means nations who used to own all New England, the Eastern Township in Canada, part of Quebec, part of Ontario, very large nation where many groups lived in different places with a different name, but were all part of the Confederacy of the Wambanaki.
Mm-hmm. And we came here together to talk about your new exhibition here in Vancouver, the Art Gallery. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
This exhibition is the second one. The first one was in Berlin, and there was a lot of research done to be able to show all this work. It's like at least 60 years of my work as a filmmaker, as a singer, and printmaker, stuff like that. And it was very, very well organized and very well researched. Mm-hmm. Big, too. When I was in Berlin, I was very impressed. And then it has come here now. It's the second place. And that's also very touching. I see all the work they've done to put this together, and it's beautiful the way it's... You need a lot of space to... They go by decades seeing what I was doing, and it's very interesting.
And why did you decide to do this exhibition, and what was your main goal with that?
Well, I never decided to make the exhibition. I was approached because somebody wanted to do it. It wasn't my idea. I would never think like that. But as I said before, it happened in Berlin, and I was extremely surprised that people from another country would have such interest on my work. It was unbelievable. And then, well, Canada has seen this, and they asked to have it here. And then it's going to go to Toronto, and then to Montreal, and partly it's going to go to New Zealand. So there's a lot of interest that is coming out of, from seeing, I guess, all this material.
And who do you think is the target of this exhibition?
The whole country, because it's our people, it's our country. And we have nations in every province in Canada. And our people are very much alive and very beautiful and have a lot to give. And just, if you just think of the different language, for instance, which is very rich, the traditions, the history, the culture, it addresses everybody.
Since you started your work or your research on indigenous history, what changed so far, and where do you see issues still?
There is such a difference that it's even hard to describe. I'm 90 years old, and when I went to school, it was a horrifying experience here. It's very different now. Where we were punished if we spoke our language, today they're teaching it. They're encouraged to teach it, and a lot of the universities, different languages are being taught, you know, depending on the area or the province. And the nations, of course, and the history. And I know that in general, Canadians are very interested in the history of this country, the real history, told by our people, written by our people. And it's very rich. There's plenty of books that's been done. And there's a lot of films, a lot of documentary. There's a lot of material there for people who teach to use. And it's the time is so different. It's like being in a different world. Our people are respected. They're well received everywhere. There are possibilities for our young people to do anything they want. If ever it was possible, it's right now. Which means any discipline. And I would say that it's just remarkable. And we're continuing. And it's more than... than hope. It's very profound, the difference.
Yeah, how did you got involved and how did you start? So you always tell different stories. So I was wondering, what is your story? How did you start with all of this work here that is shown at the exhibition?
I started from going through misery and terrible educational system and very racist and terrible stuff. So, you know, not just me, but you react at one point and you want to change and you fight for everything. And you do things yourself and you influence other people. And it's just a big war. And I think that we have won many, many things that is very different now.
Your work is also education, and this exhibition's name is "The Children Have to Hear Another Story." What do you think does that mean?
It means that you have to stop teaching the phony story, the lies, and things against our people. That's what it means. And they have to hear the real story of what is the history of their people, what is the language, what is the history. That's what it means, and it's happening now.
And you just said it. You are 90 years old, and you have heard many different stories. So which story stick to you the most, and which story influenced you till today?
It's not just one story. It's all our stories. Our people are thousands of years old in telling stories. So every nation has something incredible to teach you and to hear. It's very rich.
I was also wondering, how did your work influence you as a person, and did it change you as a person?
My work have been fighting since I'm very, very young, and I know that I influence big changes in every aspect of our lives. And I've come to a place now where I don't have to fight that hard. There's a lot of changes happening, and a lot of people want to help. And I mean institution, government, all kinds of things. So we still have to fight for certain things, but we can. And there's no intimidating anymore like it, there used to be. Finish.
Yeah. There's still things we have to work on, so what things do we still have to work on? What do you think?
Well, you know, we have to work on what happened with the treaties and correct them. And in some cases, there will be new treaty made. In some areas, it's happening. In some areas, there were no treaties. There will be treaties eventually, because everything was stolen and everything was dishonest. And I think there's a lot of people in power and people of other nations who are ashamed of it. They want to see this be corrected. And that's where we're going.
And we're also talking about the future and what's going on right now, and we still have things to work on. So have you heard about the Willow Project, and it's like going on right now in Alaska? Have you heard about that?
No.
So the Willow Project is a project that's kind of tries to get oil in Alaska, and it also affects indigenous communities, and was now newly approved by Joe Biden in America. How does it make you feel that we still have these issues, and that still people, like indigenous people, have to fight against such things? How does it make you feel?
Well, you know, it's like nothing new. People have, here in BC, the Chilcotin people just have won the title to back to their land. And so the lumbering and all those things that they were doing against the land, really, against the people, is stopped. And a lot of people are fighting against those things that are making, poisoning the water, or, you know, deranging nature and all its life. And that concerns electricity, it concerns everything. So there's a lot to be studied, why and how, and how do you provide for the people. And there's a lot of work to be done. But everything is possible now. It's very different than before.
And I'm part of the younger generation, so how can the younger generation do something for the indigenous community, and how can the younger generation give the indigenous communities a voice, and how can we make a change?
It's made the change. You sound like nothing has happened. You know, it's the contrary. And I think young people have a voice, and they're not afraid to speak, and they're not afraid to go study or ask for anything to do in life. That's extraordinary. That's happening right now. It's happening for quite a while. So it's not thinking, oh, I'm going to fight for the future to have a proper school. We're there.
Obaswam, Abenaki filmmaker, educator, and singer. This is her at the Vancouver Art Gallery last